You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. This is News Team correspondent Gary Leonard, joining the studio with Angelica Wendt, who's the executive director of Our Voice, and also Emily Balkin, who is the Walk a Mile coordinator with Our Voice. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
So for the listeners out there, let's just kind of start off with a little bit about Our Voice, an organization in this community that I have so much respect and admiration for. Can you let the listeners know a little bit about some of the work that you all do?
Absolutely. So Our Voice is Buncombe County's Rape Crisis and Prevention Center. We have been around since 1974, and since then we have provided services to survivors ages 13 and up, as well as their loved ones, with counseling, crisis hotline, hospital accompaniment, and law enforcement accompaniment as well. In addition to that, we also have another side of us, which we'd like to highlight more, and that is our prevention education side, a piece of it, where we go out into the community, out into the schools, and engage with the community around what skills that are needed to end sexual violence in our communities.
And Angelica, do you mind speaking a little bit to the myriad of different programs that you all have? I know that you kind of touched on a couple of those, but additionally, Our Voice has actually undergone some recent changes with the Family Justice Center. Do you mind painting a broad picture in terms of what that looks like now for you all?
Absolutely. So we moved into the Family Justice Center. In fact, in the next couple, at the end of June, we'll have our one-year anniversary at the Family Justice Center.
Congratulations.
And we are super excited to be there because it has changed the way that agencies interact with survivors. And in the way that, I would say the best way to describe a Family Justice Center would be a one-stop shop, somewhat like the mall. You know, you have the mall, which is a larger building, but then you have individual retailers, individual nonprofits there. And so a survivor who's been impacted by sexual violence, domestic violence, or child abuse can go to the Family Justice Center and access not only Our Voices services, but Helpmate services, PSCA Legal services, the Mission Hospital Forensic Services as well, the Mountain Child Advocacy Center, and law enforcement, as well as Child Protective Services and Adult Protective Services. So where before, if you had a survivor, for example, that was impacted by sexual violence and they wanted to get a forensic kit done, file a report, talk to Our Voice about getting counseling services, the survivor would have to get in their car and go to at least five different agencies. And so they would have to tell their story at least five times, if not more. And so we, as a community, said, what is it that we can do better? And we were able to look across our nation and came across a Family Justice Center model, which we explored. And we felt that our community was ripe to support something like a Family Justice Center model. And so now a survivor can come in and get an integrated intake done by one of our client services specialists, and where they will be presented with a menu, if you will, of the services that a survivor can access that are at the Family Justice Center. And instead of the survivor going to five different places, we go to the survivor. Right. So it's almost as we surround ourselves around the survivor, depending on what the survivor would like to see happen. And what that could look like is that the survivor gets to determine what is it that they want to see happen, but they also get to determine who they want to tell their story to and how they want to tell their story to.
Absolutely.
And so what that means is a survivor can choose to speak to three different agencies at a time or to each individual agency. There is some value in being able to tell their story many times as they want, or at least as many times as they want, because when a survivor has to tell their story, it's almost there's a likelihood of re-traumatization because you're kind of reliving the story. And so it has really transformed how we work with survivors. And our services continue to be our core services, which is especially for survivors, which is counseling, support groups, case management, and advocacy. And survivors who've been impacted by sexual violence can access their services free of charge.
So given that you've now been at the Family Justice Center for a year, and these resources are a little bit more streamlined in terms of being in one location, have you been able to see the value of this really necessary resource for survivors, kind of increase in terms of how it's much more conducive for folks, as you mentioned, that they don't have to go all over town to get the different services and have to retell that level of story and narrative and trauma for some of these survivors?
Absolutely. The value has been phenomenal in the sense of, in addition to changing the experience of a survivor having to go to several different agencies, it also has changed of the level of services that survivors are accessing.
Right.
So for us, in our first quarter of, we did a comparison, we ran the reports in terms of our first quarter at our old place versus our first quarter at the Family Justice Center, and we had seen 150% increase in survivors accessing our services.
Wow.
And like 175% increase in the level of services that they were accessing. So versus them just contacting us and wanting counseling,
mm-hmm.
Just as by the mere fact that we were in this space, we were able to facilitate more holistic services for a survivor. So the survivor would contact us, we would support them through a forensic kit, they would get counseling, they would talk to PSCA Legal about getting a protective order if needed or a civil no contact order, they would file a report with law enforcement. And so they were accessing more services. So not only did we see an increase in the number of survivors accessing our services, we saw a dramatic increase in the level of services that they were accessing. But the one piece is that I would say that I have seen a shift that the Family Justice Center has done is the way that we have interacted with law enforcement, in the sense of just by mere proximity. I guess this is sort of a good example of osmosis, I suppose, but being in the same space has dramatically changed of how law enforcement engages with nonprofits, victim service nonprofits, as well as us with law enforcement, in the sense that we were able to get a better perspective,
right,
of how our roles were and their roles were.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, we all wanted to do right by the survivor. We were just taking different approaches. But the fact that we were at the Family Justice Center, we've been able to build relationships where we can get a better understanding of what each of our role is and how we can best support survivors.
That's fascinating. And just to clarify, that is the Sheriff's Office?
The Sheriff's Office and the Asheville Police Department. And the other piece that I also failed to mention was the Buncombe County District Attorney's Office. They also have an office there.
Gotcha.
And so it's really just, again, a systems approach at a different level.
So I want to segue here a little bit. I know, Angelica, you touched on some of the numbers of folks that you've been able to work with in this new kind of Family Justice Center setup. This is a big month for Our Voice. This is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So I kind of want to couple the visceral piece along with kind of the numbers. And I think for a lot of listeners, there's maybe a bit of a misconception in terms of what exactly is sexual violence. Who is impacted? Are these things pervasive? Can you just paint a bit of a picture in terms of what that story looks like and what is really important around education awareness with Sexual Assault Awareness Month?
Absolutely. So sexual violence, there is the legal definition of sexual violence, and then there is the sexual violence movement definition. And so Our Voice, we proceed in our work through the more general, broader definition of what sexual violence is. And so we define sexual violence lying within a spectrum that, mm-hmm, can be anywhere from an unwanted comment, a catcall,
mm-hmm,
the undressing you with your eyes, all the way to full-on rape.
Yeah.
And so for us, that's how we would define it. And so under our definition, we would argue that almost, I mean, the number of people that have been impacted, if you take it within our definition, that I would not be surprised if one in two people in America are impacted by this. And I would further make the argument that actually everybody's impacted by it, because when we talk about sexual violence, it's a ripple effect. It isn't just the primary survivor, which is the person who was sexually assaulted or raped, but their loved ones also get impacted,
mm-hmm,
if their loved one has been raped or sexually assaulted. And so they get impacted as well. So if we look at it from that lens,
yeah,
every one of us has been impacted by sexual violence. Now, if you're talking about the legal definition about sexual violence and who gets impacted under the legal definition,
mm-hmm,
then statistics will tell you that one out of five college-age women will be be impacted by sexual violence. Wow. Statistics will tell you that one out of six individuals who identify as male will be impacted by sexual violence under the age of 18, prior to the age mm-hmm. of 18. And statistics will tell you that one in two individuals that identify as trans will be impacted by sexual violence sometime during their lifetime. Yeah. And so for us, it's important to be able to paint that narrative in light of what we're seeing around bills that are crafted, you know, in our state, with the implication that, you know, that we have to pass certain laws to protect women from sexual violence, from individuals that identify as trans, when the real narrative is more individuals that are impacted by that are impacted by sexual violence are individuals that identify as trans than women. And cisgender women. And so it's a piece of, like, that's why our prevention, education, and outreach is so mm-hmm. important. It's because the more that we are informed of what does sexual violence look like, who is impacted by sexual Absolutely. Violence, and what is it going to take our community to end sexual violence and to create a better response to survivors who've been impacted by it, that the more likelihood that we're actually going to see social change around that.
And this is such an iceberg issue. I mean, we hear the term intersectionality a lot in terms of, you know, race and sexual violence. So what are some of the things that you all are doing within the month of April around Sexual Assault Awareness Month?
Absolutely. So we believe in the power of that, in the sense that our voice, we are Buncombe County's Rape Crisis Center and Prevention Center, but we are not the only ones charged with helping to end sexual violence mm-hmm. and bring awareness to the event. And so through the month of April, we have done a series of events. We did a sexual violence prevention summit in early April, which touched on the intersectionalities, because that's also another piece that we need to lift up, is how these oppressions contribute to sexual violence. When we talk about sexual violence, it's not a crime of sex. It's a crime of power and control.
Absolutely.
And so what that means is that part of our work in ending sexual violence is also looking at it from the intersectionalities of the oppressions that contribute, that create the system where some folks have power and others don't. Some folks have the ability to access services and others don't. And so that's a lot of the work that we've been doing throughout the month of April, is educating individuals of what are the systems that create an environment where sexual violence can occur. We've partnered with Warren Wilson. We've done some work with UNCA and mm-hmm. other community partners around that. And we've done a lot of work around Walk a Mile, which we're getting ready to talk about in a little bit, is the culmination of
Absolutely.
Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
So let's segue right into Walk a Mile. So you mentioned there's a myriad of different things taking place with Our Voice leading up to the culminating fundraiser event with Our Voice, which is Walk a Mile. And this is such a robust program that you all have here, and I've had the pleasure myself of participating. And Emily, do you want to just share with those listeners a little bit about what the Walk a Mile event is?
Sure. So this year is our 8th annual Walk a Mile.
Wow.
So it's been going for a while,
yeah.
which is awesome. It is, I call it a community rally, because we have an hour of community time, building, lifting each other up. And then it is an actual 1 mile walk through downtown Asheville. And we encourage people to wear the shoes of another. It's not necessarily heels as it
yeah.
was in the past. We've done a shoe drive this year to diversify our shoe collection. And just
so not just heels.
So yeah, we still want to have something that draws attention. You know, so that people are like, oh, what are these people doing walking through the streets of Asheville? What are they walking for? So drawing awareness to the topic, so that people will talk about it.
Yeah.
And this event is sort of a hopeful, happy event. It's an uplifting event. So it brings people out that might otherwise feel a little timid about coming mm-hmm. out and talking about rape culture and sexual violence. And so bringing people together in this kind of uplifting environment, realizing that there's so many people out there that really care about this topic and that want to raise money for Our Voice. It is the biggest fundraiser for Our Voice. And our goal this year is $50,000. So, it's just a really fun event, bringing the community together and hopefully arming folks with ideas on how they can end rape culture and in our community.
And I think one of the things I so appreciate about the Walk a Mile event is not only, as you mentioned, it's this like invitation for the community to get involved, to walk a mile in her shoes, to be able to understand that visceral narrative piece of what it's like to be in famous shoes, but it's also kind of this idea of bringing attention to a very real, sobering issue that is rape culture, that is domestic violence, that is sexual assault. Can you talk a little bit more about not only the fundraising aspect, but what are the goals of the Walk a Mile event, that for someone who's maybe listening right now, it's like, oh, I want to participate. What can they expect to get out of the event?
In terms of Walk a Mile, one of the main goals, and I think that Emily had touched on it as well, and you as well, Gary, is the fact that when I'm asked what our work, what the biggest barrier around the work that we do to end sexual violence and to address, to be able to work with survivors, is silence. Mm-hmm. And so for me, when I look at Walk a Mile, it's probably, again, it is one of our biggest fundraisers, but it's also, when you look at the visual of the community coming together on Saturday, folks saying, enough, we are breaking this silence that perpetuates sexual violence, mm-hmm. and that is key. The other key is, it's a great opportunity to see visually how many individuals are impacted by sexual violence.
Absolutely.
It's a great opportunity to learn more about sexual violence, but it's also a great opportunity to see how many people heal despite the fact that they were impacted by sexual violence. You know, we work with individuals from the victim stage to survivor stage to the thriver stage. And so it's an opportunity to be in a place that's a safe space to be able to say, this is what happened to me, mm-hmm. and I'm okay. In fact, one of the things that really stands out for me is that at every Walk a Mile, how many individuals come up to me and say, I was impacted by sexual violence,
yeah.
and you're the first person I told. Like, this is, you've given me the courage to be able to name what has happened to me, and that while this was a horrible crime that occurred to me, it doesn't define who I am as a person, and that I should not be ashamed. And that instead of the narrative being what did the victim do that allowed for them to get victimized, or to blame the victim for their victimization.
Or silenced
at all, is the ability to say, it wasn't my fault, and now
Absolutely.
I recognize that, and that the only person that is to blame around any act of sexual violence is the perpetrator. But every year, I have individuals that walk up to us and for the first
wow.
time disclose, and they said, I never felt safer to disclose, and now I'm ready to take that first step. But it's also an opportunity for survivors to see that there is a loving community here in Asheville, in Buncombe County, in our area, and that there are resources here. And in this particular year, we're super excited because we're going to have a nonprofit alley, if you will. And so we've invited nonprofits in our area that, again, we're looking at the holistic side of individuals who've been impacted by sexual violence, and we're looking at the intersectionality. So we're inviting nonprofits that address different issues that can provide resources to survivors of sexual violence. But we're also inviting nonprofits that work on the issues, on the intersectionalities that help perpetuate this system of violence.
That's great.
And so it's really about educating folks, like, you are not alone, and that we believe you. It wasn't your fault, and we're here for you. So that's what I hope that people get out of it.
I think that's one of the biggest takeaways for me, and you really kind of articulated that beautifully in terms of the Walk a Mile. It's so much of a paradigm shift in the way that we think and the narrative and the culture of sexual violence, and the way that, like, too often we have kind of created this culture since the inception of this country to the victim, you know, you turn it, like, what did they do? How did they position themselves to be in a position that they could be impacted by this, or like silencing them? So beginning to like create a platform that feels safe, and then also for the folks who have dealt with it, that it's moving towards healing. And I think that's a really invaluable thing that you all present to the community.
Absolutely. And, you know, Walk a Mile has evolved. You know, when we first started, again, it's our eighth annual Walk a Mile. When we first started, it was Walk a Mile in her shoes. Mm-hmm. And again, it's how do we change the narrative to the true narrative, which is one of the reasons we've moved from the Walk a Mile in her shoes to Walk a Mile Asheville, the People's March, and why we're encouraging individuals to wear their funkiest shoes, mm-hmm. their, you know, because it is a light, hard way to paint this picture, but they're funkiest shoes. But we want them to wear all types of shoes because that plays into the narrative that we all are impacted by sexual violence. It isn't just women wearing heels. It isn't, you know, it's everyone. And so for me, I am still perusing through my options of wearing my flashiest shoes that day.
Yeah.
But last year, it was important for me to wear a pair of gender neutral shoes because it was able to represent all the loved ones that I had in my life that identified in many different forms that they were impacted and that I was walking with them and for them.
Yeah.
And so that is powerful right there. And so, it again, it's evolving and really telling the true narrative of our story. And so we're really excited.
So I'm really looking forward to it. I think I have in my closet a pair of red studded heels that I'm hoping to whip out for the event.
Nice.
Well, we'll have some long timers that will be out there in their heels for sure. But we did have a shoe drive at both Hop ice cream locations downtown in West Asheville, and we got a lot of really cool shoes donated. We even got a pair of flippers, which I thought that would be really interesting if we
someone if people walking a mile in flippers.
It would be hard,
would be really hard.
And it would draw attention. And like Angelica said, just last night I was talking to somebody about how somebody had told them for the first time, telling anybody that they were a survivor. And again, it was at the walk. And so I think looking around and seeing so many people from the community coming together to talk about this issue lets people know that they are supported, mm-hmm. that there is healing, and that it is okay to talk about it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because if we don't talk about it, we're just giving more power
Absolutely.
To that violence. And so talking about it and talking about it often mm-hmm. so that we can sort of alter our culture to a point where hopefully, ideally, it's not an issue anymore.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Encouraging bystander intervention, stepping up.
And this is your fundraiser event as well, in which it supports all the programs at Our Voice. And do you mind sharing with the listeners where you're at in this goal and exactly if you reach that goal, where that's going to go
Absolutely.
In terms of Our Voice?
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you a little bit of where it's going to go. So it helps fund several different crucial programs. It allows us to be able to approach our work in innovative ways. That's the one thing that I will say about Our Voice is that we have always prided ourselves by approaching sexual violence with out-of-the-box innovative ways. And while we acknowledge that the way sexual violence was approached prior to that, there is value in it, but we're also see value in approaching it in different ways so it can encompass as many mm-hmm. communities as possible. And so this funding will allow us to be able to move forward with programmatic work out-of-the-box thinking that generally doesn't tend to be funded because it's not a safe thing to do.
Right.
So allow that. It will help support all of our support staff, our program support staff. So we're super excited about that. And we're very excited to be able to say, and I'm going to drum roll, Emily, so you could give us the latest update. But I will say our goal is to reach 50,000.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a little bit over a week. I am more than confident that the community will step up and that we will meet our goal. And thus far, where we're at, drum roll, Emily.
Live total right now, $39,448.
Wow.
So
that's amazing. So we're 11,000 roughly shy of the goal.
10,500.
And I'm confident 52. That our community will step up.
Yeah.
And so if anybody wants any more information about Walk a Mile, I would encourage them to visit our website, which is www.ourvoicenc.org, www.ourvoicenc.org, or they can call us at 828-252-0562, 828-252-0562, or visit our Facebook page as well.
And again, this is News Team correspondent Gary Lerner, joined in the studio with Emily Balkin, who is the Walk a Mile coordinator, and Angelica Wendt, who is the executive director of Our Voice. Thank you both so much for joining us to share a little bit about your organization and
Thanks
this upcoming Walk a Mile event.
Yeah.